Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for joining me. This week, we have an interview, more like a conversation than an interview, with one of the funniest people in the world, comedian Bill Burr. And we cover everything. I don't even know how to describe it. There's really no rhyme or reason or order to it. We put the mic on and let Bill go. And everything from comedy to sports, big argument about Tom Brady. It's all in there. Good stuff. Very funny. So if you like to laugh, keep listening and you'll enjoy it. Here we go with Bill Burr. You ready?
Oh, he's got notes. Jesus Christ.
I'm not even going to do an intro. Just roll with this.
Here we go.
I got to have some notes. You do your podcast without notes? Well, you do it solo. You don't have a guest.
No, I have like a little like subject set list.
That's what I have.
Like I'll just say Patriots, Vikings, or whatever.
That's what I have. Belichick, football coaches.
Okay. Brady. All right, let's do it. Let's go down your list.
Keep going this. Well, let's start with this. So let me get everyone straight. So Bill Burr is here, the famous comedian, hilarious, one of the funniest people in the world. And my colleague Matt Dollinger is in studio. First time this has happened. He's like, I've had all these podcast guests, John Cena, Blake Griffin. He's like, I want to meet Bill Burr. Can I come? So Matt is here too. He's going to chime in at some point. I saw you, I think it was 3 summers ago, Jones Beach. You were part of this comedy tour thing with like Sarah Silverman, Louis C.K. I forgot the name of it. It was a slew of comedians.
Yeah, it was that Live Nation thing.
And I feel like it didn't get like this attention it should have because the roster was off the charts and it was one of the funniest nights I've ever. I mean, it was you and David Tell. I know I laughed from the start to the finish without stopping once. And Louis was great. And I don't know if you're allowed to say that anymore. And
he was great.
Yeah, he was great that night. And Sarah Silverman was great.
He killed it that night.
Yeah. So it's like my all-time favorite comedy show was when I saw it. And who would think Jones Beach would be? Is that weird to perform at Jones Beach?
No, it was really cool because I saw Aerosmith there with Motley Crue opening up like 10 years before. And are those groups funny to you, man? Those are fucking great groups. You're like laughing like
that. That's Lou laughing, not me, because I go every year and I see Poison, Def Leppard.
Hold on. I'm not laughing because my first question is, was Jim Florentine with you?
Oh, if I was over there? No. I don't think he was there that. Oh, when I went to that? No, yeah. I went with DeRosa. And Aaron Perry, Joe Perry's stepson, used to come into Uninformed when we used to do that. So we got to know him. So he's like, hey, I'll get you some tickets. And we went out there. And then the fact that Motley Crue was opening up was a bonus.
Oh, God, yes.
I played drums as a hobby, you know, and I always loved Joey Kramer. And Tommy Lee was like, you know, this god to me. So I got to go up there and he had this really cool DW kit and he had like this fur, you know, around the outside of it. You know, he's always doing something crazy with his kits. And so it was kind of a 2-for-1 thing. So then to be on that same stage, that's what I always think. I equate a lot of stuff to music.
Yeah. I went into that as a fan, though. I'm just like, comedy show at Jones Beach. This is going to be weird because, you know, if you're in a small room and there's that laughter, there's that sound, there's an energy. I didn't know if there'd be that energy, but it worked out really well.
I see what you mean. There was definitely an element of me that this makes no sense that we're doing this here.
But the water in the right there in the background. And
You go out there and it was a great crowd and all of that.
Thank you.
That tour, that was an interesting tour because there was a lot of, like, you know, mixing of crowds and shit. So, I don't think I would have done as well now on that.
Why?
Just because of, you know, there was enough of the social justice warrior on that show. Mixed with my bullshit. Someone would have been triggered. Unfortunately, that's the way it is now.
No matter what you do today, don't you think someone's still going to be triggered? Can you do an act today without anyone being triggered?
I really don't give a shit.
Right.
I'm just doing my fucking act, and if you don't like it... Yeah, you're well within your right to say you don't like it, but I'm not changing any of it.
Right.
You know? Until you achieve something comedically,
then
I'll respect your opinion on the direction my act should go. But other than that, if I hurt your fucking feelings, it's like all those other jokes didn't hurt your feelings. Oh, the ones that just pertain to your world hurt your feelings. Well, isn't that a great way to go through life?
Right.
Those are all jokes, but these ones, those were statements.
It does seem like people... on top of the social justice...
Very few. There's very few people that are making all of this fucking noise. Everybody else
Right.
Is dying laughing, you know?
Well, does it, do you feel like it's a combination of, there's the social justice warrior element of it, and it does also feel like people refuse to laugh at themselves.
No, it's corporate money. That's what they're exploiting. So they go after the corporate money. You saw it with the NFL. The NFL was just like, these players have a right to take a knee if that's what they blah, 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 blah. Then they quickly realized that racist morons also buy football jerseys. So they're like, okay, no. Don't do that anymore.
Right.
Because they corporations, they can't have one nickel roll out the fucking window that could have gone into their pocket. So right. That's how they base their viewpoints and their stances. So these people who want to change things, for better or for worse, socially, know that. So they just go after the money. They're not really making points as much as they're going after the advertising on your show. And that's how they're – what's hilarious is they're supposed to be these liberal progressive people, and they're some of the biggest bullies you're ever going to run into.
Right.
To the point that if anybody even just who's not involved goes, well, I can kind of see both sides of it, they try to destroy that person. It's very like you know, I obviously not old enough to have lived through like the Red Scare. It's sort of the Red Scare meets MySpace. And I'm just waiting for somebody to say the classic line there was like, was that line that finally diffused it?
I don't know.
I forget what the fucking line was.
There it is. But so when you're putting together your act, though, is that in your head about, I can't say this, I shouldn't say this? I mean, it has to be there
no,
somewhere.
No, if anything, all of this shit's going to make me go harder at it. Because I don't like, you know, I don't like control freaks being around me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the ultimate when someone's literally telling, it's like such a dysfunctional fucking relationship that they're trying to get you involved in. Like, I'm going to tell you what you can and can't say. And the fact that they're, which, you know, if you're going to do it in a, you know, have the decency to do it in a fascist way, I respect that. But if you're actually going to do it under like a, you know, under rainbows and butterflies, acting like you're this fucking great person. It's like, you're literally telling me what I can and can't say. You haven't realized that you've literally lost your fucking mind at this point. And for some reason, but I don't know. But most people see that. Most people get, you know, they go to jokes. Some of the shit my wife has said to me, like, if she's fucking, you know, when she trashes me, I mean... I guess if I really listened to what she was saying, it would be offensive, but it's just too funny not to laugh. Right. I mean, almost half the time I was about to pull over the car.
Well, it does seem like it's a matter of, it's just, there. If you say things privately, it's fine. If you say things publicly, then you get in trouble, which is kind of bizarre. Like what your wife says to you.
No, but then there's also this shit where like people will watch a clip and get offended by something was said at a show they weren't at.
Right.
That's why. Stop clicking on shit that's going to make you offended, you fucking idiot. You think that's the worst thing you're going to see on the internet? Why don't you go watch somebody's head get sawed off while they're still alive? You could watch that too.
Right.
Why aren't you offended by that?
Well, there are definitely people who they're looking to find.
They are. Yeah. That's the thing too, is if you've noticed, you have to be a certain level of comedian. It's actually like, oh, I've reached that level that someone feels like they can hitch their wagon to me.
Right.
So, whatever. It's all.
But do you think it's all because of social media? 100%?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but there's something inherently funny about white women complaining, saying that their lives are difficult when you live in America. It's like you fucking basically hit the lottery.
Is it only white women who give you pushback?
No, they're the ones that I find funny.
Oh.
No, if African Americans, the points they're making makes sense. It's like, I get it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying, like, you know, that, you know, if you're female and you're white, that you can't have complaints. But like how much they're heard over people with actual way more problems is there's an element of racism to that is not addressed. It's just fucking funny. So it's a joke I do in my act. I go, "What's the matter? Your rosé wasn't chilled today? Did the trolley not work at the mall? Like, what is the
I'm
fucking..."
I'm sure that goes over well with the females.
No, it does. No, and the thing is, a lot of women laugh at it because they have a fucking sense of humor about themselves, which is why I love making fun of feminists, because they have no sense of humor, generally speaking, about themselves. So as a comedian, it's your job to literally go, that's where the fun's going to be.
Right. But that's what I said about people laughing at themselves. Like, your last stand-up, you did a whole section there about fat people. I laughed my ass off watching that as a fat person. I mean, I wasn't offended, but, you know, I don't
love redhead jokes. They're fucking funny.
I called somebody a ginger once on Twitter, and people were like, that's disgraceful. You're racist. You're this. I was like, ginger now is an offensive term. I didn't even know that.
No, happened. I find that funny because that's a European term.
Ginger?
So, yeah.
Really?
So now everybody's, yeah, they've been ginger baker. That was 50 years ago. Right, they've been calling redheads ginger for a long fucking time. He's a ginger, right? Ginger, whatever. So I thought it was hilarious when I went over and they were saying that. You're a ginger, whatever. Like, I love oh my God, I saw it last night. I was watching this thing. They were talking about drinking in London. And he's like, right, he's a vomer. He's a vomer. That means you puke when you drink. Like, vomit. Like, he's a vomer. It's just fucking
funny
to me.
Yeah, it's a good word. Yeah,
but that's one of those things where I would hate that if that came over here and we started saying it because it ruins travel.
Right, right.
So now they're like, I'll be like in the middle of fucking Indiana and someone will say ginger. I'm just like, ugh.
Well, that's been here a long time, though.
What is?
Ginger.
It hasn't.
No?
No.
I've always remembered that. I think.
No, you haven't.
Yes.
You haven't. You never said that. I've been a redhead my whole life. It was always redhead, better dead than red, all the shit that I got.
You know, there's athletes who are called Big Ginger. And
red. No. Who?
The guy, what's his name? What's his name? The college basketball guy with whatever. You got me. Fine. I'm not.
Yeah.
Ginger's been around forever.
It hasn't. You made no point, and then you totally capitulated.
They never called Big Bill Walton Big Ginger.
No, not Bill Walton.
But I'm just saying, he was a redhead, right?
All right, fine. Ginger's new. Okay, sure.
It is.
No, I'm just saying it's new to you. I don't know why. Are you one of those people? You don't like being wrong?
No, definitely
I feel bad
not.
For your wife.
Yes, Matt. Never. No, oh, okay. Never.
Just let it go on this
All
one.
Right, I'll let it go. I'll let it go.
It's like me telling you what it's like to be fat. I mean, I have no idea what it's like.
It's not fun, that's for sure.
Can't tell me getting fat isn't fun because I've done it.
Giving
in to what you want to eat at 2 in the morning is in that fucking 20-minute period is fucking ecstasy.
All right. Getting fat is fun. Being fat is not fun.
Of course.
There it is.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But I'm saying there is an element of fun to it.
Yeah, there is. Sure.
Having no discipline.
Yeah.
Seeing that new fucking, they put the cheese in the crust. You think, I don't want to eat that, but actually just fucking ordering it and then having a pint of your favorite ice cream. I mean, to live that life. I mean, you're like a Roman emperor in that fucking moment. It's just afterwards when you hate yourself.
Well, all the minutes after and before, that's all. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, they have salad bars, buddy. The solution is out there.
Yeah, but
this is a walkable city.
The salad bar is like...
There's literally no excuse with all the information out there. For me to continue drinking the way I do and for you to keep fucking getting every fucking new taco that fucking Taco Bell puts out.
How much do you drink?
Well, I'm on the wagon now, but like, I drink way too much.
Way too much?
To the point I'm watching documentaries on it because they're discovering this new thing about binge drinkers, which I am. Where it's like, you're not an alcoholic. I don't wake up like, I need it, man. I got to fucking have it. But when I go out and drink, like, I can't just get a nice warm buzz anymore. Like, I just
go. You got
to
go.
I go, yeah. And unfortunately, I have it. Well, unfortunately, when it comes to my drinking, is I have a job. I don't have to be there till 8 the next night. So it's 2 in the morning.
It's a perfect.
And I almost have an entire day to forget what a fucking idiot I am. If I had like a 9-to-5.
Yeah, then it's a little.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of 9-to-5ers who drink like there's no tomorrow too.
Yeah,
they're called functioning
like,
alcoholics.
But I feel like they feel it more.
Yeah. What's your drink of choice?
Oh, anything brown.
Anything brown.
Whiskey, bourbon, scotch. I like.
Now, how does that? Do you like to drink before you do a show? Do you like to be sober during a show?
No, I don't do that.
Never. After a show, I would assume.
Yeah, after a show, it's just great. You had a good time. You're fucking wired.
I was gonna say, how do you come down from? That
I find the quietest place I can, and then I just sit with the guys I drank with, and we just break each other's balls. We talk sports, and you know, we get into fights. You know, Mayweather would have fucking destroyed all this. Hey, he wouldn't have survived with Hagler Hearns, and we just do that shit.
That's how I got to like not liking to lose an argument because it all starts with sports. Like when you go sport people, I mean, sports fans are not sane people.
I have to tell you something. There's
at all,
there's such a zen to just saying, you know what, you're right. And just
there is,
it. Yeah,
there is.
Then you don't say that the resentment doesn't build up,
right? But in sports, that's very rare. Where a sports argument where someone will say you're right, it's usually
you ever have that moment when you're sitting there just quietly after you've lost, And everybody's continued having
and you relive the argument in your head.
No, but you're trying to think that next thing, I'm going to get this guy, and he's talking, and you feel yourself hating your friend over sports. That's when the alcohol. That can literally ruin a friendship.
Yeah. There's a famous story about Mike and the Mad Dog who broke up after 19 years of doing it. And right before they had broken up, they got in this big, massive fight on the air about whether the Yankees needed a new stadium. And they got, it's on YouTube. They got in this vicious fight. It was heated about Yankee Stadium not having enough bathrooms. And I remember when they broke up, someone wrote something like, "The greatest sports radio partnership is ending because these two men fought about whether the Yankee Stadium needs new bathrooms." Like, when it comes down to what the argument is, it's always something absurd.
Yeah, because that's not what it was about.
Right. Well, yeah.
I was shocked as a Red Sox fan that they knocked down that place with the best. You have to say it had the greatest mojo. They have the most championships. You know, and their championships are pretty legit. I mean, everybody early on, you know, you got your 23 Skidoo years where there's somebody, you know, winning Stanley Cups when it was the size of a shot glass and they played on a pond, you know? Like the way the fucking, you know, Canadians count all of those. You know, the Celtics, you know, so many of ours we won, it was like a bunch of white guys and you couldn't even cross over. You had your hand on top of the ball. People taking diaper shots and stuff. They won 11, not in fucking, you know. But the Yankees, I mean, it's just like, you know, to go from Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, to DiMaggio, to Mickey Mantle, where they just kept having the guy, the LeBron or whatever, the Jordan. And, you know, it's really legit. And just like, my favorite thing about new Yankee Stadium is that they re-put like the facade where it used to be.
Right.
Because I always wished I could have gone to old Yankee Stadium before the original one, before they redid it. And there was this great picture of Joe DiMaggio when they were redoing it, and he was standing in the outfield. He just had this look on his face. Just, I don't know what it was, but it was just, I don't know. Now being a 50-year-old guy, I'm starting to understand that look on your face.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to say the best thing about the new Yankee Stadium is that the Red Sox own it.
Oh, no, but you know.
No, I know.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is they keep trying to get that Yankee thing. It's just like when we finally won, that was the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And now we spend $200 million. I mean, so there's really no there's no difference. It's just great baseball. But I love what the Yankees are doing where they most of this team is their own from their own farm system. And then they added that kid from Florida this year. So I know you guys, you know, are stocking up against. So, I mean, you guys will – this is how successful the Yankees are. Do you realize if you don't win it next year, that's the only second decade that they haven't won a World Series since the 1920s.
It's crazy.
And in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, they won multiple – in 70s, they won more than one, you know, sometimes five or six, maybe even seven, maybe in the 50s or something. The 80s, they didn't win any. 90s, they won three. And then they won two in the 2000, 2009. I never know how to count that. I just count when the odometer flips.
The zero, yeah.
2001 was the official new millennial, whatever. Right. So.
They should have won in 2001. That's the one that hurts the most by far. Diamondbacks, Luis Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah. I remember because of 9/11, it's the only time I rooted for you guys.
Right.
Actually, rooted for you guys. Oh, what's his face? Brewer's got a killer bit about that. Jim Brewer, have you seen this bit about? Oh, my God. I'm not even trying to do it justice.
Yeah.
He's got a killer bit about that. And it's just like.
Are you more Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics? Like, give me your power rankings of
who I like the best.
Yeah.
I was a Bruins. I've always been a hockey guy, but I've always also been a football guy.
Yeah.
So the football and hockey were my big things, and then basketball. You know, coming up with Larry Bird and all them. So those like when they did that 30 for 30 on the Lakers Celtics rivalry, I couldn't watch past 84. Because watching the Lakers drink champagne in the garden.
Right.
I still remember Kareem hit that shot, and he made the fist. I love Kareem.
Yeah.
All right? And like, that's a champion right there. Like, fuck these guys. We're going to drink in their building. But as a Boston fan, I can't watch. I still can't watch
it. No, I understand that.
And then
for sure.
The fact that then I'm going to go through Len Bias dying. Because what we would have done, you know? Ugh. Like, Len Bias died, and Larry Bird decided to blacktop his own driveway. Oh. Do you remember when you go to Grossman's and they would give you a stick for a 5'9", 10-inch guy like me? And he, at 6'9", went out there like he was always like that. He'd go to the the Olympic Village when he was playing on the team and like walk away like I ain't paying $11 for a bear. That attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And would just walk off 6'9" to go to some dive bar.
Yeah.
I ain't paying somebody to blacktop my face. It's like, Larry, live a little. Yeah.
Well, the money back then wasn't what it is now, that's for sure. But he still could have afforded it.
He had enough.
Yeah, he could have afforded it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the Patriots, where do they fall into all this? Like, are you one of these nutso? Like, can you admit Brady's a little weird, Belichick's a lunatic, or you're one of these Patriots fans that doesn't see that?
No, what I love about being it.
And I love Tom Brady for the record, but he's a weirdo.
Is how you guys so hate the Patriots.
I don't hate the Patriots.
So successful.
Wrong. I love the Patriots.
That you guys have to be like, you know, don't you get tired of winning? Don't you think they're a little weird?
No, I don't think. No. It's just
what exactly? It's this, as you're eating your pizza and ice cream. Do you find weird about him? That he has movie star good looks.
No.
That he delivers in the moment.
No.
A supermodel.
No. That's all the stuff I love about him. I just wish he wasn't a snake oil salesman with his TB12. $100 pajamas that make you recover and you're stretching your bands.
Oh, marketing himself? So you must not a lot of athletes weird.
No.
That has got to be one of the worst points ever made. And I don't care that you're doing the
So
Trump
you are, okay, so you are the psycho Patriot fan. Okay, I wanted to see.
How did you just win that?
Does Tom,
you said you did? That's like my fucking wife does.
He never said you're right.
Does
so
Tom
it's not
Brady
over.
Need to sell $100 recovery pajamas? You're Tom Brady. You're Tom fucking Brady. Have a little self-respect and not scam people with recovery pajamas.
Okay. Have a little self-respect. The guy's fucking 80 pounds overweight.
But I can still have an opinion on Tom Brady being
a scam
artist.
I'm
going
to go at you as hard as you're going at him. No, you hate him because he wins.
No, I don't. He's my favorite NFL player.
I hate Obama and I'm a Democrat. You're doing that bullshit.
He's my favorite NFL player. I just don't like that he's trying to scam people with his pajamas and his bands and his cookbook.
Okay, well, you're entitled to that opinion. I don't find it weird that an athlete has a marketing deal. I find it very pedestrian.
Do you have the pajamas? You sound very defensive.
I'm not defensive. You just don't have a point right now.
My point is very laid out.
And I don't agree with it.
You don't have to agree with it.
Well, fine. That doesn't mean I'm defensive. That's your world. Like, if I don't agree with you, that means I'm defensive?
You seem like the type of person that would call bullshit on someone selling recovery pajamas.
I'll tell you what's bullshit. The tuck rule is bullshit.
I agree.
That is a fumble.
I agree.
Okay, a football move is bullshit. The way they protect quarterbacks now is bullshit.
Agree.
That fucking Casey LA Rams 53-52 game was bullshit. Everybody acting like, oh, my God, can you fucking believe this? How many yards do you think Marino and Elway would throw in today's NFL if they faced each other? Well, there's essentially Teddy Bruschi.
Yeah, you're right.
Literally wrote, okay, he goes, it pains me to write this. Offenses are going to score. You just try to, like, make one big play and, like, just basically describing last year's Super Bowl, which was a fucking joke. It was like watching two people playing Madden football with real people. It was a fucking joke. Like, the fact that one of those defenses was going to walk around with the Super Bowl ring letting up all of those fucking points where there was, like, two punts the whole game. That to me is once again a corporate move where it's like, we have all the real sports fans. What attracts the casual fan?
No doubt.
Offense.
Yeah.
Like if you took soccer, it's never really made a hold over here. If they started having games 7-6, Americans would start watching it because it would be interesting. Because they're too far down the road. I'm not going to learn all those fucking songs. You know, and get a scarf. I don't have the time in my life. But if guys just start scoring goals left and right.
Yeah. Oh, no. And the ratings bounce back and they're up big time this year. So there's going to be nothing done to slow down the offense.
Getting back to the tuck rule, there's a lot of Raider fans that still feel that they need to avenge that.
Right.
And they don't know their history. They didn't realize that was revenge for the roughing the passer call in 77 against Ray Hamilton, which was complete horseshit. Which gave them the fucking game. Because back then when there was roughing the passer, wherever they threw the ball, that's where they put the ball. And it was the end of the game, and Stabler threw it down to the goal line. So they were like on the fucking 50 with like 5 seconds left. They put it right on I think Mark Van Egan or somebody ran it in the next play. It was complete horseshit. Like, Hamilton was in the air as he was throwing the ball. Was he supposed to change direction? So, and then the tuck rule was, where in 77, that was a bad call. 2001, that was a bad rule.
Right.
You know, that's just a bad rule.
Yeah, yeah.
They
called it by the letter of the law.
It was the right call on a bad rule.
Yeah.
So, whatever. So, there you go. So, now do you still
feel... We just agreed.
Yeah, yeah. So,
what do you think of Belichick?
He's the greatest coach of all time.
Right. I agree with that, too.
Okay.
Did you see him get into it with Thielen yesterday?
And it's exactly what he should have done. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. It was a fourth in inches. I could see if he got into it with the running back. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Is that like a heckle moment? Like a heckler moment?
No, I think what he was doing is I think he knows that Belichick was basically the one, by getting Wes Welker and putting him into his offense, made the NFL believe in a white wide receiver again.
Well,
so I think in a way, he just wanted to be validated that he talked to me. I just want to know what he said to him, because the press, Belichick's entire run here with the Patriots, is trying to get some sort of emotion out of him. They couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
And he was up there. Just the way he said, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. And the thing is, if Bill Belichick is telling you to shut the fuck up, then you should probably shut the fuck up. And then I love that kid went out and dropped a pass like the very next play or something. Haven't said that. What's his name?
Adam Thielen.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal player.
Yeah, good player.
Oh, my God. Yeah. How he would thrive.
He'll be on the Patriots one day. Yeah, he'll be there.
I feel like we have, like, this year is a total rebuild year where we lost our two top receivers, our running back, our left tackle, and one of our best cornerbacks. So the fact that we're kind of hanging in there, and we really are kind of hanging in there because we're not winning, like, decisively. And I am not looking forward to playing Kansas City in Kansas City.
All right, hang on, Bill. Just want to tell my listeners out there that this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is sponsored today by Mack Weldon. All right, let me just tell you, Mack Weldon is better than anything you're wearing right now. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Website couldn't be easier to navigate. They have the most comfortable line of underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well, too, whether you're going to work, going out on a date, or just doing everyday life activities. I've shopped on Mack Weldon's website, bought their hoodies, couldn't be more comfortable. The website could not be easier to use and to navigate to see all of the clothing that's on there. The selection is excellent. And for the listeners out there right now on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, you get 20% off your first order at Mack Weldon. All you have to do is visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code MEDIA at checkout. Once again, 20% off your first order, MackWeldon.com, and you enter the promo code MEDIA at checkout. We have to mention F is for Family on Netflix.
Yes,
so let's
season
do
three.
That.
Yep.
Season three. Before we even get into the show, if you're a comedian like you are, especially high-level comedian.
High-level shit jokes right here.
Can you even think about doing something on network TV? Like, it has to be Netflix at this point, or like an HBO, right?
No, I don't know.
Like, could you do a sitcom for ABC?
Well, I don't think that. That's just not my...
Right.
That's not who I am.
Right. Like,
that's just not.
But for the freedom,
but I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to do.
No, no. But I'm saying for you to have that freedom, if you're a comedian and you want to have that freedom to do exactly what you want,
the freedom I would love is all the time off I would have if I was just rather than doing animation, which takes forever.
Right.
I thought I was being smart.
Tell me about what the animation process, and like you said, it takes much longer. How much longer?
It takes us like a little over a year to get the thing done.
For how many episodes? For
10.
10 episodes, it takes about over a year to do.
Yeah.
Because of the animation.
But now it moves quicker because now they know the characters. They kind of know the style and feel. It's just in the beginning. I mean, literally in the beginning, when you have an animated show, it's this weird thing where you have to have your own look. So you basically have to create your own race of animated people. And it's just like you're looking at eyeballs. You're like, oh, that's too much like The Simpsons. That's too South Park. That's too Family Guy.
Right.
So you have to The Simpsons, everybody is yellow, right? If you really look at it, like the way they do it. So we spent like 6 weeks on noses and eyes and chins and then like style of animation, like just sort of the look of it. Which, by the way, we just recently had somebody Is Rick and Morty, is that a,
yeah,
a cartoon?
Yeah, Comedy
Central. This person wrote on that. Oh, my God, is that a funny film.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit. But if you look at them, the way that they're drawn, the whole thing, that the way that, that is, it's all like your own thing. So at the beginning of the animation thing, or Nick Kroll, the Big Mouth mm-hmm. show, you know?
Yeah, I know Nick, yeah. From
yeah, so they...
He was in the league, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the hardest part. But after like two seasons, like season three was easier... Than was less work than one and two combined. Right. Yeah.
And what about writing it? Do you, is it easy for you?
It's easy on easy days, which most of them are, because we have a killer writer room and right. Just really, really funny people. And but just certain days when it's just not working and you got to pull it apart, you're like, ah, fuck. You know what I mean? It's just like, you ever put something together in IKEA and then you miss something and then you got to take it apart? Just, it's the script version of that. And you're like, ugh.
I write a column every day for SI.com. And there, you know, when you do it every day, there's days you get in there and you're just like, I have nothing to say. I have nothing to write.
And that's why you love a guy like Rex Ryan. And that's why the press hates Bill Belichick, because he makes you guys work.
I disagree. I love Bill Belichick is a fountain of content. Love Bill. He's great for content. Yesterday, cursing out a guy. That's beautiful.
I know, but he never does that.
Well, no, he's given you a lot. First of all, here's one of the best things about Bill Belichick, the way he throws the challenge flag.
I love it.
It's one of the greatest things in sports.
It is.
It's in his sock, first of all. So right off the bat, that's phenomenal. And he just, you know, it's like he couldn't, it's like he's so pissed off he's got to go into that sock and toss this flag, and he does it with the disgust.
I feel it's an efficiency of movement. It's like, I don't need to throw it
right
to the middle of the field.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just drops it. Meanwhile, there's other coaches that are flinging it. Belichick's great for content. I love Bill Belichick. I think he's great. I mean, listen, he's the best coach in the history of the NFL, and he's...
The man's in control of his emotions.
He's great for content. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Just his press conferences alone, where he won't give any answers.
Well, because you guys blow him up. He knows. They know.
I like you guys. Like, I've been in a press conference with Bill Belichick.
No, because...
I would never ask him a question. Press, I know he's not going to answer it.
The people in the press, what he's doing is you guys... Any little fucking thing you say, they're going to blow the fucking thing up, which helps the other team. So he just, no matter who, he could be playing a bunch of eight-year-olds next. Well, you know, they got a lot of weapons.
Yeah.
And he's just going to just give you that. That's all he's going to give you. And that's why I just think it's so, like when the Red Sox won the World Series, those guys saying, hey, looking at some game film. Who the hell did we play? I don't even fucking remember. They were...
The Astros with the Alex Bregman. With the,
and then the back-to-back-to-back home runs. It's just like, why did you just do that?
Right.
That's why I thought it was stupid for the Red Sox to play New York, New York. It's just like, you know, already the Yankees already have a fire lit underneath them because they lost.
Well, the Yankees did it first, so they...
I know, but it's stupid. You should have just fucking ignored that, done it, you win. I'm a big score a touchdown, hand the ball to the ref, and just let them sit in the silence of that as opposed to sitting there.
I agree. I mean, I think if you score a touchdown, you should
celebrate.
Playing
double Dutch or whatever the fuck it is they're doing.
No, I like all that. I love all that. But don't piss off the other team. I agree with that sentiment.
You don't think going down and taking a group photo every time you fucking
I don't think that, no, because I think, because that has nothing to do with the other team, really. The other team's going to do it too. I mean, it's not a personal thing towards the other team. It's not like, you know,
I trash swear to talking. God, dude, I get like douche chills when I watch it because the celebrations are so fucking bad.
I hope you didn't see someone yesterday did the Macarena. You would not have liked that.
I don't mind an end zone dance, but when they've like choreographed it and worked it out, like I'm going to be in a canoe and you're going to be on the bridge and reach up and just like, oh my God, it doesn't even have anything to do with football.
No, it's just fun.
I don't know.
I love it. I'm sorry.
I love how the pajamas are weird, but like having a musical breakout after a fucking touchdown is not weird to you.
Recovery pajamas. I feel like that we're not going to get past the recovery pajamas. All right. So F is for Family, Netflix, December.
No, it's already out.
Oh, right. We're in December, right?
Yeah, November 30th it came
November
out.
November 30th.
So it's out.
So everyone should check that. And you're going on tour, right, in Europe?
Yes, I am.
Have you ever toured Europe before?
Yes.
Like, what's the difference between Europe and the States when you're doing stand-up?
You just get in your head, and you're just thinking, are they going to get this? And then that's the quickest way to start bombing. So the way to do it is just go over and you act like you're here.
Do you find they get it just like Americans?
Yeah, and then if they don't, you just make fun of the fact that you thought they were going to get it, and then you move on. But, I mean, I would literally go over there and talk about those recovery pajamas.
All right, Matt's going to ask you a couple questions because he's a diehard.
F is for Family is awesome. Jimmy,
thank you.
You got to get on it. There's a lot of shit on Netflix.
I know.
It's fantastic.
He's busy. He's writing columns. He's doing a podcast.
I'm very happy you don't work
at
SI.
Eating.
I was waiting for you.
I'm drinking.
I'm watching Jimmy lose every argument to you right now, and I usually lose my arguments to Jimmy, so thank God you do not work in our newsroom. I am a mouthy Colts fan, so I would not do well with you. Things would go poorly, but I work with so many
Jim
Boston
Irsay,
fans.
One of the biggest cheaters in the game.
Yeah, but he's numb. He doesn't feel any of the pain.
I know. There you go.
Anyways, here's my question for you. I work with Boston fans. Every time, this one fan in particular, Avi, every time we get into a fight, it always boils down to the same thing. You've heard it before. Colts Patriots, Manning Brady, Deflategate. It's the number one debate, though. Marvin Harrison or Aaron Hernandez, who's the bigger monster?
Oh, God.
Wait, Aaron Hernandez or who?
Marvin Harrison.
Oh, okay.
Well, Marvin Harrison was never proven, so.
That's correct. Thank you, Bill.
I would say Aaron Hernandez.
Thank you. All right, once and for all, we settled it. I thought you'd have more to
so
say.
So you
there.
Wanted. You,
no, because
you
I don't think people dying
guest.
Is like a good comedic.
Well, when you're a Colts Patriots fan, when you're a
I thought
Colts
you were
fan,
gonna,
you
I thought you just I thought you was gonna ask about like Deflategate.
I know you figure you get that all the time. I figure I go. With
no, I don't want to talk about Deflategate.
No, we're not doing no. that. But here's my other question for you, because Boston fans, you grew up your whole life rooting for a lot of bad sports teams. Last like 15 years, it can't get any better. I'm wondering, have Boston fans thought about what it's gonna be like when Brady retires? Are you gonna go back to this misery is me thing? Do you think the good times will continue? What do you think?
No, I was actually talking to a sports fan about that last night. I go, I kind of feel like it's we maybe got one more run in us, okay. And it's all what we do over the off season. But like, you know, Belichick is almost 70. But like, the great thing was I watched 30 plus years of sports before all of this happened. So, you know, I saw Dan Marino kick the shit out of us for 15 years, right. And now they're still waiting for their next Dan Marino. It's very rare that you go from a Peyton Manning to an Andrew Luck. I mean, you got to tank half a season is what you have
and
to
it
do.
It still doesn't work out.
Or go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. That's very rare that happens. And we're certainly, you know, greatest quarterback of all time with the greatest coach of all time. It's just that's never going to happen again. So it's just like, you know, I'm going to be like Billy Crystal when he used to talk about watching Mickey Mantle at Yankee Stadium
good, right?
Like that.
Yeah.
But but the thing is most sports fans never get to experience that. Never. So you just enjoy it. Brady is still playing at a ridiculously high level. He just doesn't have the weapons he needs. But, you know, yeah, I'm just going to enjoy it.
Well, Boston fans by nature are such good talkers at all. You know, before you guys won anything, you guys were already, I feel like, holding your own in every sports debate. Now you've won for 15 years.
No, we weren't, dude. We were getting killed. We had nothing. There was no. The Red Sox Yankees rivalry wasn't a rivalry.
But
until,
you had the confidence. You still talked.
No, we
like
didn't.
You guys, I feel like.
No, because you're talking. You're too young. You're talking.
You're thinking about now.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No, dude. We still like. If you look, watch Dan Shaughnessy.
Yeah.
You know, you read his articles. You're looking at a guy who has sports. PTSD.
Right.
Where he will, the ball is always going through Buckner's legs in right. that, no matter what is going on, other than the Celtics.
Yeah.
Because the Celtics were the only ones that continued to win. And even then, that was like, you know, when Len Bias died and then Lewis died and the whole thing. It just was really bad. And it was a bad time. Cam Neely, you know, all of that stuff just was.
Rick Pitino.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Pitino, that was a bad time. Yeah, so there was, you know, we went, so I've gotten to experience both, and the Celtics are, you know, Celtics almost have like too much talent, so
they do.
Trying to figure out how to play with each other, but no, I'm just enjoying it.
I'm just wondering if Boston fans will go back, will humble you? Will Brady and Belichick moving on, will that reset? Will you start rooting for the other teams, or will it go back to being that?
Yeah, this is all just your miserable experience
yes,
as a fan.
Yes.
So, you have to be like, there's a certain type of person. Like, I haven't talked shit at all unless somebody gives me shit. I'm just not someone who talks shit. I don't. Because I don't rub it in. I'm happy that we won. We don't need to.
Right.
Score a touchdown, flip to the ref. But like, you know, I remember all the shit I used to get being a Red Sox fan. Half my friends were Yankee fans and comedians. And when we won in 2004, like, I was so amazed at their lack of ability, Yankee fans, to take shit because they had never had done it. Like, you couldn't get one on the phone. And I'm, no, I'm happy for you guys. I'm really happy for you guys. It's like, you're not happy. You're fucking miserable. You just had the biggest fucking choke in baseball history, and none of them showed up. And I was just like, eh, all right. And then something happened. Then they won in 2009. No, there was a Yankee fan, I remember, a comedian too, called me when we we choked away a lead in September in the Bobby Valentine year, right? Oh, God. Yeah. And he called me up. I don't think the Yankees were even in the playoffs. And he called me up to trash me. I was like, dude, I have not heard from you since game three of 2004. And it really made me lose a lot of respect for him. Yeah. It's just like, dude, you're a whack-a-mole fan. Like, if things are going good, you pop your head out. If they're bad, I don't see you for years. It's just like, you're not a sports fan. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of bandwagon in Boston. It's just inherently with like winning, the same way there is in like Indianapolis or any other place you're from. But I was there when they sucked.
Yeah.
I'm there when they're great, and I'll be there when they suck again. And, you know, like I had season tickets in 1989 when they were supposed to be good, and they went 5-11. And I was that was, you know, but whatever. But I mean, I didn't think we were ever going to ever win a Super Bowl. We used to play in like a high school football stadium, Texas style. And so, yeah, it's been a great run. And I'm happy and I'm satisfied as a sports fan. And I, you know, feel bad for you that you got to deal with obnoxious millennial fucking Boston sports fans. But
you are beyond classy.
He's playing an act. He dishes it out just as much as he takes it.
Please. Oh yeah, he probably plays fantasy football. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, but, I mean,
that's fine. Yeah. You can do sports fan that way if you want to. That's not how I do it. And I don't hang out with sports fans like that.
I
think those they're mouth breathing morons.
Every team
you go to a sports bar and some guy your team scores a touchdown. He's like all day. He's wearing half the uniform. It's just like why don't you just put on cleats? You fucking
The older I get, the less patience I have for sports fans, which is bad when you're in the sports industry. Absolutely. But my God, they're demented.
I've got the young builder experience. Yeah. Every team I root for is terrible. One day you assume maybe this will change.
But no, that's what makes it better. Like there's things that I'm enjoying. Like I would love to see the Chiefs win it. I don't want to see them beat us, but I would love to. Their fans have been waiting since 1970, seeing Baker Mayfield bringing the Cleveland Brown franchise back.
Crazy.
And having a cocky quarterback. And it's just like they need that. You know, I don't root for fucking misery. There's only a few fan bases that I have no sympathy for.
Who are those?
Canadians, Yankees, and Laker fans.
Oh, God. What about them getting LeBron? That just seemed like the worst thing that could happen to the 29 other fan bases.
I just feel like there's almost a rule where it's almost like the Lakers can only be bad for so long despite the bad moves that they made. And how everybody, like the reason why the Celtics have had such a difficult time competing with the Lakers, because the Lakers are the most successful franchise of my lifetime, they won the most championships, is that once the free agency thing took over, we couldn't compete.
Right.
Where it was just like, all right, do you want to come to racist Boston, deal with the winner and bang fives and sixes?
Right.
Or do you want to go to racist LA, have perfect weather and bang models and superstars? We can't compete with that. That's basically it. I made a point to say that they're both racist because there is that thing to try to act like all the racism in this country is in the South and in Boston. Isn't the truth.
No.
Yeah. Become a road comic and talk to people afterwards. Oh, yeah.
You must have a lot of athletes who are huge fans of yours, I would assume.
I don't know.
No?
Well, I don't really run into athletes in comedy clubs. We're kind of living in two separate worlds.
I'm surprised. I don't know. I would think athletes would, I don't know, try to reach out, and I'm sure they watch your specials on Netflix and all that stuff.
I don't know.
It's funny. I want to ask you about
I live in my own world, sir. I watch MeTV.
All right. It's a good channel.
It's a great couple channel.
The Honeymooners. Love it.
I go back further than that. Honeymooners was further. I watched 77 Sunset Strip. Peter Gunn and Joe Bartnick got me into The Untouchables, which is great. And I like the old gumshoe shows from back then.
The Honeymooners, is that the greatest show of all time? As a comedian, what do you think? Or is it Seinfeld?
It's the greatest show of all time, and also what hurt so many comics like me trying to get something on the air.
Because
it just, 40 years later, they still wanted, all right, you're a big dumb lug. She's smarter than you. It was just like whenever, that's why I could never get I couldn't get anything on the air was because in my scripts, like the guy also was right sometimes.
Right. Right, and that never happens.
No, that was considered sexist.
Yeah.
But if the guy was just dumb as shit, being like, oh, what would I do without you, honey? I can't even dress myself without her. Like, they couldn't get enough of that shit. That's what always blew my mind when they talk about the power that men have in this business. I never got to that level where there was the guy. Every fucking person I ever pitched to was a woman. And they would just shoot down all of my shit. And then if you'd come back with just like, okay, you know, I'm not the brightest guy, but I got a good heart. They would just, oh.
No, you never pitch to men? It's always, I mean, because you always hear about it. It's usually men running.
Casting directors, yeah, everything. I've run into like maybe two male casting directors, and I think they were both gay. So it's never been like this whole, you know, whatever they're talking about. Evidently, I'm not high enough in the business.
Meanwhile, the poor honeymooners, they wouldn't even get on the air today because Ralph threatens to punch Alice, and that would
that aspect wouldn't, but
that
but,
aspect
but the formula of it,
yes,
where you know he
but Pal Wright and the Kisser would not get on TV today.
Yeah.
Before you go, I wanted to ask you about two stories. Well, so you just did the Hot Ones, and it's funny because wait, let me just say this.
I resent that picture out there where he's got big, juicy wings.
The Hot One?
Because the one, I don't know where they got the wings.
So someone on Twitter accused me of that. So this did not work out this way on purpose. It was totally by chance. I had Blake Griffin on this podcast last week, mm-hmm. and he did the Hot Ones, and then you did it the week after. Now I have you. Then someone thought it was like I was in cahoots with Hot Ones. I was not.
I don't know.
You seem like you handled it well, though. Like, you didn't seem like you were going to completely die from the...
That dude, now it's that one that I found out isn't even like they said technically it's not a hot sauce because of what it's made. That one that's called the bomb,
right?
It's just hot for hot sake. It's like a comic that's just loud for loud sake. They're not saying anything.
Right.
I think I just criticized my own act, but it was stupid. Like that's the hottest thing I've ever eaten. And I did a gig in India one time, and I ate this pepper, and everybody at the table was like, "What the fuck?" And the waiters just started bringing all this yogurt over to me, and dude, everything was just like.
How long after you filmed it were you still feeling it?
The heat of it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Afterwards, that, and then also it was the room temperature milk, and the wings were kind of dry, and they were also not hot.
Right.
You know, so it was.
So not the most fun interview you ever did.
Did you ever had milk with wings? Why would you ever do that? So, like I kind of was sitting at like, I had like meat sweats and shit. And I was just like, definitely sitting at home afterwards thinking that was just wrong.
Right.
I like that the host was just relentlessly asking you questions.
You know what's funny is I didn't notice that.
No, you didn't.
And then when I watched it, I saw that whole other element of comedy. I was like, it's fucking hilarious. I'm like, dude, this is wrong. This is fucking bad. You know, in 2005, you did a movie.
Yeah, right.
Like that I was so in. And then I touched my eyes. That was the
worst. No.
And they give you like one. And then I noticed him. He didn't even touch his napkin yet. So basically what you were watching was like The Hustler, and he was Jackie Gleason, and I was Fast Eddie.
You just got that
sucking
smile.
Down the whole thing, and he just goes, all right, you know, want to play pool? He puts his sport coat back on. Yeah, he's a great guy, man. So I had a good time with that. I don't know if I'd do it again, though.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
I would demand colder milk and a quality wing. And I would do it again.
You can't do water with that. That won't take away the heat. It has to be milk.
There's something about the milk gets it off your it clings to it.
Yeah.
Like what it's like a grease fire basically.
Right, right, right.
Water just sort of moves it around but doesn't get rid of it.
This episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is also brought to you by Lightstream. This holiday season, give yourself the gift of extra money in your pocket when you consolidate your credit card with Lightstream. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate. Get a credit card consolidation loan with rates as low as 6.14 APR with AutoPay. That's much lower than the national average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Plus, your rate is fixed, so as rates continue to rise, your rate will not budge. Also, with Lightstream, you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you could even get your money as soon as the day you apply. The application is 100% online, and there are no fees. I've been to the website myself. Very easy to use, very easy to navigate. The application's easy to fill out. And of course, SI Media podcast listeners get a little something here. This holiday season, save even more with an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/SIMedia. That's lightstream.com/SIMedia. LIGHTSTREAM.com/SIMedia. This offer is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Once again, lightstream.com/SIMedia for more information. In terms of comedy, give the listeners one stand-up special, old school, that they must watch if they've never watched, and one current that they should watch if they've never watched.
All right, can I give you the two? Because I
outside of yours.
The two, I would never do that. Two of, I feel like my...
Well, friend, listen, you've got a couple in there that could be there.
That, okay, I would say, as far as a comic, I mean, I don't know how younger kids would view this, but the Richard Pryor one, live in concert in Long Beach, mm-hmm. and Bill Cosby himself, I feel like those are comedy at its height as far as working clean and then just being completely unfiltered. Because there's an art to both of them.
Right.
You know, there's this whole big thing that working clean is more difficult. And it's just, this, you know, it is. And then there's also doing what Richard did, because there's a price you pay for doing that.
Right.
Because working clean doesn't mean just not cursing. It also means don't have opinions that will disrupt, you know, don't be on the right side of, you know, certain arguments or whatever. So, but that's the best that those two things can be done. I mean, yeah. Bill Cosby sits down and kills for 90 minutes. I think he says asshole one time. Other than that, just totally clear.
Yeah, and I think there's a goddamn, he's, well, I shouldn't ruin the joke, I guess, but
I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. He says, he has a good line in there about, until I was 10, I thought my name was goddamn it. My brother thought he was Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually did the theater where he filmed him, Bill Cosby himself, and I didn't realize I was there till afterwards. I was like, fuck, I would have liked to have, like, taken that in. So, right. Anyways, and then nowadays, what was the one that you should watch?
Yeah.
The problem is I don't watch a lot of them because I don't want people's material in my head, but my favorite one that I loved was Dave Attell's last one.
Okay.
Where he was on the road, like in his element, which is where you want to see Dave, in a club, on the road, in the zone, having a good time. Like, yeah. What I really struck me as far as, like, I mean, Dave's, you know, his jokes are nobody has better jokes than him going on 25 years, but like, just the sheer fun he looked like he was having,
right?
Which is, you know, I love seeing a comic on stage having fun. That's the best.
I'm telling you, that night at Jones Beach, it was him and you back to back. I remember I couldn't breathe, not to kiss your ass because you're here. We talked about at the beginning about all the political correctness and people are afraid of this. And there's two stories that I saw recently that I figured I would just throw at you and let you riff on them and say whatever you want to say about the nonsense that's going on. The first one is new. Yesterday's story came out that a Cleveland radio station is banning the Christmas song Baby It's Cold Outside.
Because of the homeless people?
Because of the Me Too era. Because the theme of the song is he's trying to get this woman to stay and she's trying to leave for the night. So they're banning the song in Cleveland.
That's so ridiculous. I don't even like... That, you know when somebody just says something so ridiculous it's not even worth engaging? You just sort of stare at them and nod like, okay, you do that.
And the other story was around Thanksgiving, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Why can't you just not do it?
Not do what?
Why can't you just not play it? Why do you have to tell the world that you're doing it? It's just so like...
They want the credit.
Yeah, that biblical thing, how heathens pray in public so you can see how fucking holy they are.
Right.
If you don't want to do something, just don't do it. Everybody is just so prancing around showing about like how great a person they are. Like there was a hashtag on Twitter. It was called Things I Don't Tolerate. And adults and they were just saying all this layup applause break stuff. They're like, racism, bigotry, and then my favorite thing, mean people. Yeah. And everybody's just like, and what I loved was all you had to do was write that. You didn't have to live that life. You didn't have to demonstrate it.
Could you do a whole act 60 minutes just on the nonsense you see on Twitter?
I wouldn't want to. Then I become the Twitter comment. Right, but I mean,
but
yeah.
You could.
Yeah, I probably could. Yeah.
The other story was around Thanksgiving. Oh, I hope this doesn't come back to me being fat. But around Thanksgiving, Sarah Michelle Gellar posted on Instagram a picture of herself wearing either a bikini or like bra and panties. I don't remember. But it was something like that. And she said something like, I'm going to put this picture all around my house to remind me not to overeat on Thanksgiving. And she got vilified about she's promoting eating disorders. And then she had to apologize. Your thoughts?
She shouldn't apologize.
That is the apology now is becoming worse than what is going on.
Yeah.
Don't apologize.
I'm sorry I have discipline. This is what you need to be in this fucking business. This is another thing, too, is they act like only women go through that. Like, in my business, as the guy, you either have to be the fat guy or be in shape. The worst thing to be is be middle ground. And I actually, from the shit that I get on Twitter, I know what my weight is. I need to be 172, 171. Anything above that, hey, Billy Red Tits. Hey, fucking booze bag. You know, hey, how many chins you gonna have underneath, hide underneath that beard? And it's just like, that is just, and it's one of these things. These fucking people where it's just like, you know, who are in my business where it's like, who feel that they're going to step out on a stage and not be judged. It's just like, listen, you signed up for this shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like a fireman bitching that he lost his eyebrows in the last house fire. It's like, well, what if you're fighting fires, dude? What do you think was going to fucking happen? So, I mean, I don't know. I think, like, I do shit like that.
Right.
Like, I fat shame myself. That's how I stay in shape. Look at you, you tub of shit. And my wife would be going like, you look fine. No, I don't. Look at this. Look at this. Fucking grab a whole fucking handful here. You have to hold yourself to it. She's not. This is the thing. She's not. She doesn't have an eating disorder. She's just in shape.
Right.
So what it is was a bunch of fucking insecure people. Then fucking they have their reaction to it. And then it's a way to, like, you know, does she apologize? Because she's sorry or because she's trying to not fuck up? You know, people invest in the movie. They know the game.
Right.
People invest millions. There's millions to lose here. So now she has to apologize, even though I would love to hear what she said behind the fucking.
Right. Exactly. When I see that story, it makes me livid. And then I get doubly livid when she apologizes.
I 100% support that she put the picture up there. And I wish I was in the shape of her.
Don't apologize.
Hold on, I have to throw a curveball here. There's another story, and I want to see if you get angry about this one. Did you hear about the lady that's angry at Southwest because she named her daughter ABCDE, pronounced Absidy?
Absidy's a great fucking name, though. But she just, her mom.
Doesn't the daughter have special needs or something? And that's
I don't know.
She,
I didn't see that far. Yeah, okay, yeah. Well,
No. Yeah. Listen, there's two fucking things that you can do as a parent that just blow my mind. Give them a please beat the shit out of me name. You know what I mean? Right. Absidy is a great name, but just spell it that way.
Right.
Okay? And then, like, it's like she went out there to get fucking attention. It wasn't enough that you had a cute kid. You had to be like, oh, that's how you spell it? Wow, right? And then another thing is people who have a kid and then just put their political agenda on them. Like, I'm going to raise this kid gender neutral, or I'm going to the future. They put like a 3-year-old, but the future is feminine. It's like, can you let the kid have a childhood?
Or the family that doesn't refer to the kids as babies, they're thabies.
I've never heard of that.
Instead of a boy, like, they're not baby, they're thabies, because they don't know if it's a boy or it was but, weird.
It's just, no, and that's one of those things where it's like, it's what I like about when I grew up was I could actually have a childhood, because it wasn't the internet and there wasn't all this horrible shit that your kids can see, which I like, you know, I'm not into censorship, but I understand if they could come out with a fucking internet that, you know, my kid goes to school someday, what's going to stop some other kid whose parents are a little more lax from walking up with like a fucking iPhone and showing him a porno. Right. So it's like, I like that I had a chance to I don't make fun of my daughter or anything in my act, because I feel that stepping out into the public world it's a really personal choice, and I'm making it for her if I do it. So if I ever was to tell a story, I would just say how awesome my daughter is, and then if there was a story, I would just say what an idiot I am. But sure. I would never give bullies at school ammunition to then, you know, go after, even make her life harder. You know what I mean?
I think like about that with porn stars who then decide to have children, and it's like, great. So there's going to be a day where a kid's coming up with a smartphone. Say, look at your mom when she was like 20.
I know. But if you see why they get into it, I actually look at porn stars a lot like comedians, that if they actually, you know, I remember this guy called me after I became a dad, he said, congratulations. He goes, you made it out. A lot of comics don't make it out, you know, and you just become this sad sack guy who didn't get married, didn't have kids. So if a porn star, whatever makes you do that, you can come out the other side and find love somehow and actually have a kid. It's actually a great thing. But it's unfortunate,
That you have to think that question.
Yeah, that you have that thing and that the kids, kids are so fucking mean that's why I'm going to try to avoid. You know,
I think Louis's done bits about like like bashing his kids in a funny way, not in a, you know. And
it's all a personal choice. How I'm deciding to do it.
And it ends up being funny just because of the shock value of it. When he's like, you know, my daughter, this asshole did that. You're just so taken aback by it. You laugh, but it, you know, because everyone has that sort of in their head sometimes when they deal with a kid with like, you know, what are you doing? But yeah, it's.
Why? What story have you told on this?
No stories like that. No, I agree with you. I think
the kid bought him recovery pajamas for Father's Day, and he got pissed.
I can't believe Bill Burr doesn't hate the recovery pajamas. That's
I was not even aware that they existed. This is the thing. I don't watch really very little pregame or postgame. If I watch it, I like listening to former players, which is why I love Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long.
Forget that. Give me an announcer you hate. Who bothers you? Who drives you crazy?
I'm
who do you want?
Doing that. I will tell you, I miss like my favorite, just because they've been around so long and everything. You know, when you get to be 50, everything's changed. I don't even recognize the fucking skyline of New York City anymore. If it wasn't for the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building, it's changed so much. But that's why I love. Like Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Chris Collinsworth is a guy that gets a lot of shit. I love Chris Collinsworth. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like he just says what's going on or what he feels is going on. He played the game. So I just like, you know, you just, there's just too many, too overly sensitive.
Yeah. He's
like,
good.
I'll tell you, the New England Patriots are just not getting it done. And it's just like, he's right. They're not. Yeah. We're fucking up.
He's good. I feel like he's gotten a little cornier over the years, but he's still good. He's very good. Al's the best. Al Michaels is still.
I think they're both.
Al Michaels is so good, and he doesn't age. He doesn't, in terms of his voice, his quality.
And he's a huge hockey fan.
Yes, he is. Yep. Al will always be the greatest to me because of the Howard Stern prank call with OJ. That to me is the like single greatest moment in TV history.
What happened?
You don't know about the greatest.
I'm sure I saw it. Wait, so who
the night of the OJ.
Bronco Chase
in 1994.
Someone pretended to be OJ and call Al Michaels?
No, someone pretended to be OJ's neighbor. A regular Howard Stern prank caller.
Right.
Not Al Michaels, Peter Jennings.
Okay.
And he calls and he's like, he calls Peter Jennings and he's doing just such an over-the-top character, black person accent.
Right.
Peter Jennings has no clue what's going on. And the guy's going, oh my God, Peter, it's quite the tensus. I see OJ and he's scared. And Peter Jennings is like, yes, this is a very tense moment in Brentwood, California. And then they hang up on the guy and then Al Michaels comes on. He's like, Peter, that was a totally farcical call, lest anyone think that was serious. And then he went on Howard and they recreated the call. And,
Peter, this is Al Michaels.
Yeah. You've never seen this?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of things. I vaguely remember that.
It is. And Al Michaels.
He
was a huge Howard fan. That's the other thing. Who would think Al Michaels would be a Howard Stern fan? And he was. And he was like, at the end of the prank call, the guy goes, I see OJ and it's quite the tenses. And Baba Booey to you all. And Peter Jennings just keeps going, not even listening to the caller.
Yep.
And Al goes, Peter, that's a totally farcical call, lest anyone think that's real. It was the guy said something in code indicative of a popular radio host. Because, you know, back then they wouldn't say Howard on the air. But it's on YouTube. You should watch. It's
one of my coolest sports memories. I did something for Inside the NFL at the Pro Bowl. I always wanted to go to the Pro Bowl. It just seemed like that old
Hawaii.
And I went up there and I got to talk to Alan Collinsworth, and I went up there in that stadium. It was just so old school. If you saw the stools they were sitting on, remember those science class metal stools these worn out like cushions on top? And it was just like, you just felt like you were like, when you met Alec, this is like the real deal. Like this guy was into sports and when sports was sort of underground, you know what I mean? As opposed to now 24-hour sports networks and all that. This was like, they used to be, remember sports, the local sports thing at the on the local news, it was 5 minutes at the end, and you sit through all the stories.
That was huge in New York. Warner Wolf, you know, Len Berman.
We had Bob Lobel.
Bob Lobel, and Butch Stearns.
Was it Bob Neumeier? Guy Zip something or other on Channel 7 who played with the Washington Generals when the Globetrotters came to town, and everyone was chanting Zip, Zip. And I remember Geese Osby was getting on him. It was just, and everybody knew the inside joke. Everybody got it because it was just sports fans and stuff. But Yeah, now there's games 52 to 51.
It also shows our age, unfortunately. Yeah. We remember that time.
Grumpy old guy.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming in. It was really nice of you to come here and do the interview. And good all luck right. with F is for Family on Netflix.
F is for Family, season 3.
And when does the European tour start?
I also have a movie out right now called The Front Runner, starring Hugh Jackman and Vera Farmiga. It's the Gary Hart story.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which I didn't realize.
I didn't realize you were in that, okay.
I didn't realize that was the first time mainstream media covered an affair.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that just, and I remember that knocked him out of the race. It took 6 weeks. It was a week.
Yeah.
That Donna Rice thing came out on Monday. The next Monday, it was over. And what was amazing is 4 years later, Bill Clinton runs, and it just has a whole bunch of those scandals. He's just like, what? I fucked them all. Still want to be president.
Well, what is?
I'm taking out the saxophone.
What is?
On Arsenio.
When they said, what was it? Dude, what is sex? And he goes, well, what is mean? It, you know, that was
that's
the
a lawyer.
Yeah. The movie's getting great reviews. It's
good. No, it's definitely, Jason Reitman directed it and all that. It's just, it was the coolest thing I've been in a long time. So I really hope people go out and get to see it.
All right.
Just please don't go see another action hero movie. Not action hero, Marvel comic, whatever the fuck you call it.
I'm with you on that. All right. My many thanks to Bill Burr for coming in. Appreciate it. And good luck with everything. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. All right. My thanks to Bill Burr for a very, very fun conversation. Enjoyed it thoroughly. Hopefully you did too. And make sure you check out all the other interviews there in the archive for the Sports Illustrated Media podcast. Blake Griffin last week. Ian Eagle was hysterical a few weeks ago. Tony Reale recently. Great interview. John Cena. It's all there in the archives. Subscribe, rate, review. It's all appreciated. And thanks for joining me this week. We'll see you next week right here on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.